We're doing Pirkei Avot together with the Jewish home. We're up to Pirkei Avot, the first chapter, the fifth Mishnah. Yosei ben Yochanan, Ish Yerushalayim Omer. Yosei, the son of Yochanan, the important man in Jerusalem, he says, Yehi veitecha patuach lirvacha. Your house should be wide open so that guests feel comfortable coming. Veyiyu aniyim b'nei veitecha. And when you need to hire someone, take the poor and let them be the ones who are frequenting your home. Hire them, give them jobs. Ve'al tarve sicha im ha'isha. Don't talk a lot of idle chatter with the woman. Ve'ishto amru. They said it about one's own wife. Kal v'chomer be'ishet chavero. How much more so with one's friend's wife? From here, our sages taught, kol zman she'adam arbe sicha im ha'isha, so long as a person is extending and spending a lot of time talking idly with the woman, gorem ra'a le'atzmo, he is causing harm to himself, uvotel midibrei Torah, and he is not learning Torah, he's wasting the time from learning Torah. And ultimately that will lead him to inherit perdition. So, let's understand what we just read. So the Mishnah begins by giving us instructions to have an open home. How open? So the simple reading is, open like Avraham Avinu. Open doors. You invited a guest. If you could leave the door open, you're saving him a minute of discomfort. Very often it's that knocking on the door that's uncomfortable, and if the door is open and the kids are out there to greet him, so that's nice. It's taking into account that it's not comfortable for a person to come and initiating the invitation and making it available. What's the flip side? And this is an important point. You know, you can run an open home, but you have to know what the limitations are. If you're going to run a home where you have ex-convicts in your home, you have to know what the limitations are. You shouldn't leave your wallets out. If you're going to run a home where you're going to have people in rehabilitation, then maybe you can't have wine out. You have to know that there is a price. And you can't just say, well, I'm keeping this Mishnah, I'm keeping an open home. And a person has to be intelligent. Chazal warned us, don't let a bachelor run a daycare center. And even though in the time of Chazal, they said, in our day and age, we're not worried that they're going to have intimate relations with the little boys. But the Gro already writes, and the commentaries write in Shulchan Aruch, that in our generation, it's not so clear anymore. That's 500 years ago. So I once wrote an article after... there was all kinds of molestation going on in this neighborhood and in Harnov, where kids were going off alone to the pool. There was a pool in the middle of the woods, and little kids were going there alone, and all kinds of things happened. And it's really very traumatic when it does happen. The victims sometimes don't put their lives back together again, ever again. So parents can't be stupid. You know, you run an open home, that's very nice. You have to protect your own children and yourself. If you're going to run an open home, then you have to know where you're going to draw the lines and the limitations. There has to be a certain agreement between you and your wife that certain guests you don't leave alone with the kids. Someone's always there keeping an eye on what's going on. I know that... some rabbis run an open home all week long, and on Shabbos they have no guests because that's the only time they can be with their kids. So if they'd run an open home on Shabbos too, then their kids would never have them. Every person has to know what the balance here is, depending on what your circumstances. Different situations demand different things. One thing you should know is that kids get gain from it. It's good that my kids saw this Pesach that one of our guests brought soft matzahs, and they saw there's a concept of a soft matzahs on Pesach. Wouldn't be so nice if their whole lives they grew up like I grew up. The matzah is like this, hard as a rock, and they never knew that such a matzah exists. You know, all of our great-great-grandparents might have used that matzah. So they gained from that. And there are a lot of things you could do to help your kids gain from the guests you have. One of the things we try to do is we have guests from all over the world. You guys, I mean, from all kinds of different countries. Every guest that comes, we try to ask them to tell us a little bit of what their country is like. Well, what do they eat there? What do kids play there? What's the weather like? What's the place famous for? So the kids get a little bit of geography. My kids know already people from France and people from Holland and people from wherever you guys come from, they know. South America, I mean, slowly but surely, we're covering the planet. Baruch Hashem, thank God for Mechon Meir. You have to remember there's also an obligation to your own kids. Sometimes people have guests, and then the kids fall by the wayside. And that's okay if it's one meal that way. That's okay if every so often it's that way. But your kids need you at the Shabbos table. And sometimes that means you have to limit the guests. Sometimes you have to tell the guests, guys, give me a few minutes and talk to the kids. Find out what their week was like. You can't just take this Mishnah that says, run an open home, and that's it. I'm keeping this Mishnah. I'm opening the doors. Your first obligation is to your family and your own kids. What we try to do is have at least one meal where we don't have guests. It's this way the kids know. They have one meal where they have me for themselves. They're more comfortable climbing on my shoulders during the meal and stuff like that. When you guys are around, they don't usually do that. So every family has to find their balance. And you'll also notice that some guests require more attention than others. And sometimes you have to factor that in. It's one of the things you'll have to discuss with your wife. People sometimes take this to an extreme. There was a couple in Brooklyn who were very pious, and a woman came knocking on the door, and she said, I have no place to sleep. I have no place to stay. So the wife of the house is a big tzaddikus, and she took her in. And you have to understand, they live in a small basement apartment, a little bit bigger than this room, with their three kids. And this woman obviously had issues. And the guy came to me and asked me, what do I think? I said, I think you got to help her long term. Whenever situations arise, you have to think of the long term solution. Taking her into your home, I don't think resolved anything long term. You can't live this way. She can't stay long term. You have to get a social worker, and you have to get her into a home, and you have to get her into a system. You can't assume that this is going to resolve anything. And unfortunately, a few weeks later, he came back to me and said, it's a pity we didn't do that. Because one Shabbos, she just went too far. I don't know, I think she was urinating on the floor, and I don't know what else they were putting up with. The woman really had problems, but he said it was the middle of Shabbos, and my wife had it up to here. Suddenly in the middle of Shabbos, my wife got up and said, finished, take your stuff, gamarnu, goodbye. The middle of Shabbos, nothing mattered, didn't matter, my wife couldn't handle it anymore. I don't blame my wife, but I wish she would have done 2 days before Shabbos, not the middle of Shabbos, and I wish she would have done it in a planned way, so she'd have a place to stay. In life, we have to know that my father has a saying that life is like a sponge. When you have a sponge that's filled with water, you try squeezing in one place, water's going to come out of another place. You got to carry it gently. And there's a balance in life. So the Mishnah is teaching us a direction to go that we should run an open home. But we also have to know how to apply it. It's important. Take the message the Mishnah is giving. Run an open home. Have guests. Even though it's difficult, it means you have to wash more dishes, it means you have to buy more food, it means you have more cleaning, it means the meal is not exactly the way you want it. If the guests are sleeping over, it means linen. All this stuff adds up. It's work. You know, as bachelors, you might have a lot of theories when you're dating about what kind of open home you want to run. When it'll come down to it, you'll suddenly realize that for your wives and for yourself, It's suddenly different. The meal has to start at a certain time. What happens if you need another 15, 20 minutes? What happens if the guests are late? I'll never forget the guy who told me he wants to come for the meal Shavuos morning. So I said, okay, you're welcome to come Shavuos morning, but we're starting at 11. So he said, yeah, but I go to Chabad Minyan. They only start davening at 10:45. So I said, okay. So then I guess you'll have to make other arrangements. You know, I'm going to be up with the guys all night. I need to go sleep after the meal. He said, no problem. Okay, the meal's starting at 11. Fine. Comes 11 o'clock, we're waiting, he doesn't show. Comes 11:30, the meal doesn't show. We have a bunch of guys waiting, everyone's zonked. So 11:45, we start the meal. We have the whole meal, it's 1 o'clock, everyone gets up to leave, there's a knock on the door. This guy went to his Chabad minion. Oh, I'm so sorry, I forgot. What are you going to say? You've been up all night. You're not exactly game for having a guest now. You just finished the meal. Forget the fact that the food's cold. So I'm saying you have to factor. I can tell you didn't get invited again. No, I don't have to put up with such chutzpah. I didn't tell him anything then. I sat down with him. I had the meal. I sent my wife and kids to sleep. I sat down with him. I didn't say anything. I tried to be as polite as I could be, considering that I was so white. But what can I do? I'm not going to tell a Jew, go fly a kite, go find your own food yom tov morning. Maybe that's what I should have said. Maybe that's what he deserved. But I'm just saying, you see a behavior like that, don't invite a guest again. You have to take this mishnah, but take it with perspective.
If you had said that, would you?
If I'd have said what?
If you told him, sorry, you can't have...
No, I wouldn't have done that. I would have made a package. Here, take a plate, go to yeshiva, go eat. I'm not sit here with you. And I could have done that. I don't have it in my heart to do that. Technically, I could have said, you know, I understand that. I don't want you to go hungry. It's yom tov, but here's a plate. We'll put together a portion of everything and go enjoy it in the park or something. You know, I could have done that. You have to remember that your kids see what you're doing, and God seeing what you're doing. And I don't know. I couldn't do that. Maybe I should have. I couldn't. The guy comes at your door and you say goodbye. I don't know. But this is a level we are supposed to attain where our home is open. One of the nice surprises we had, I don't remember if any of you guys were there this place out, was that one of the meals, suddenly there's a knock on the door, and it was a guy who I didn't remember, but he's looking at me like I'm supposed to know who he is. Mm-hmm. I know I didn't invite him. I don't know who he is. Also, we were like almost finished with the meal. So I said, Shalom Aleichem, so good to see you, come on in. He sits down, he makes kish, and he sits down to eat. And he says, gee, I'm sorry, I see you guys are at the end of the meal. I said, no, sit down, eat, we're fine. It wasn't the morning after Shavuos, I could handle another half hour. Okay, so he sang some smears and he ate. At the end of the meal, he reminded me that he had been at our Seder a year earlier, and he wanted to see the family again. Okay, that's nice. I mean, I don't suggest you guys do that. No, it is nicer if you let a person know in advance, but it also, it gave me a good feeling. So I said, okay, so maybe to some level I've kept this halacha. That he feels like the home is open. He feels like he could come. Do I know if he had a place to go? He didn't have a place to go. I don't know. I haven't spoken to the guy all year. I met him first time last Seder. I met him second time this year, Pesach. I don't know. I wish him well. But we do have it to aspire to make our home a home where people feel comfortable coming. And all I'm saying is we have to know how to balance that. Otherwise, a person can find himself like that woman in the middle of Shabbos when somebody's had it up to here and then he explodes. I don't blame that woman. I don't blame her for kicking her out. I think she made a mistake in taking her in or in taking her in without limits. In life, we have to know how to put the limits and then it will work long term. So on the one hand, yes, the home has to be wide open. On the other hand, you have to have the partner for it. Your wife has to be happy with it. And if ever there's a choice between making your wife happy or a guest happy, the wife comes first. Because if you keep your wife happy, then long term you're going to be able to have many more guests. If you forgo your wife's happiness once for a guest, that's it, forget it. You got problems. You got to remember the balance. The home has to come first. And then you can have a home that's open. We're not on Avraham Avinu's level. Who are we kidding? When we have a guest show up Shavuos morning at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we have to work very hard to put a smile on our face. Avraham Avinu didn't. It was third day after circumcision, and he was looking for the guests. Where are we 3 days after circumcision? Those of you who experienced it, you know. Okay. Yeah, David.
Where does it say don't let a bachelor run a daycare center?
Mishnah at the end of Kiddushin. And at the very end, the last Mishnah, second to last Mishnah. Yes. You want something like that?
What if you have lots of people turning up at your door? Who's paying for all that every week? If they've got lots of people turning up at your door every week,
you are. It's part of the cost of the mitzvah, right?
Isn't it like they should be inviting you back, though?
In Chazal's time, that was customary. In today's day and age, you also have to work within a budget. It's true. If you factor in, when you're a young couple, so it's you and your wife, you use half a chicken for a Shabbos. You invite two guests, it's double that. It is an expense. It's a, you're right. You know, it's interesting you should say that, because in the United States, it's negligible. People's incomes are different, and I find that in the United States, people don't factor in the expense of the guests as far as the food. And here in Israel, it's not. It's not, because we live on a different budget. It's true. It is a part of the budget, and a person has to figure how much he wants to dedicate to that. That could be a reason why a person will say, I can afford to have guests once a month and not three times a month. That's true. It is a part of the budget. You have to remember, though, that Chazal taught us that the expenses of Shabbos and Yom Tov don't get factored in Shemayim. Meaning when God decides how much money you're going to have for the year, that's except for certain exceptions. What you'll spend on Shabbos, provided that you do it on a steady basis, what you spend for Yom Tov, and what you spend on your kids' education. Now, how to apply that is a good question. But in general, that's the attitude Chazal wanted us to have. That we don't think of the expense when it comes to Shabbos. And Shabbos, I think, includes the guests. I think so. But how to apply this is a separate discussion in Halacha. Meaning, how do you apply that, the financial aspect? It's a good question. It deserves its own class. Yes?
What about the situation of this lady being thrown out of the place she was staying in Shabbat? Is it possible that by the fact that someone is throwing her, and she might end up doing malacha, it would be like a situation of a person making another person doing Mechalel Shabbat?
No one's saying it was right.
It can happen. Like, what happened if this person that has no place to go, no place to eat, Mechalel Shabbat? There is a case, right?
It can happen, but the trick is not to get into the problem. The trick is make your limits before you accept someone into your home. Or in the beginning, before it explodes. I'm giving you tips because I don't want it to reach an explosion. I'm telling you a story about people who are big tzaddikim. I don't expect any of us to be on that level. You know, we had about 3-4 years ago, Friday night, we got a knock on the door. Two women, a mother and a daughter, say that they just got out of the hospital and they have nowhere to go. They need a place to stay for Shabbos. So I said, okay, you just got out of the hospital. Show me your tudat zehut. No, I don't have tudat zehut. How'd you get to the hospital? Well, we came from a far out place. They told me a whole story. We have cousins over here. If you could just lend us a sweater or coat, it's freezing out there. It was cold outside. We want to get to this in this place. So I asked my wife, do you have any sweaters you were going to give away to tzedakah anyways, sweaters or coats you don't want? My wife said yeah. I said okay, so either you keep an eye on them or I keep an eye on them, and one of us will go get the coats, but you're not leaving them in the house for 1 second without our eye on them. And I don't care if one of them has to go to the bathroom, the other one has to leave the house. They're not staying in the house for 1 second without both of them being under our supervision. Okay. I get to hear, after Shabbos, they'd been going around. And then one family took them in. And they stole all their jewelry. And they made off with it. So they came with a sob story. It's like when you're in Tachna Merkazit and people come and tell you, you know, I got to get up to Netanya and I lost my wallet. It might be true. For the one time it's true, I can tell you there are 100 times that are not true. I tell them good luck. You're a Jew with a kippah. Yeah, that's why I wished you good luck and not bad luck. Okay. Okay. I don't think we have to believe all of these stories. In that case, I said, you know, someone's cold. It is cold outside. I don't want them to be sick. Most of the people in this country are Jews. I can assume they're Jews. I'll help them. I don't have to risk my wife's jewelry or whatever else there is. They knew I suspected them. Right. I made no bones about it. So they asked me, why don't you trust? I don't know if they asked me, but I've had similar circumstances where people ask, why don't you trust me? And I always say, those of you who went to buy an esrog with me, you remember my line. Lend me 100 shekel. But I don't know you. Oh, so why should I trust you? You wouldn't lend me 100 shekels. I'm supposed to trust you in my house where I have other things. I have things here that are worth much more than 100 shekels. Why should I? Chazal didn't expect us to be stupid. You know the story of Rabbi Yeshua. We told the story of Rabbi Yeshua. Yeah. Rabbi Yeshua took in a guest, gave the guest food on the finest silver, and then gave the guest to sleep. He set out a mattress, set out a bed for him in the attic. Comes the middle of the night, the guest gets up, wraps up all the silverware in his bag, puts it over his shoulder, and goes to the hole to climb down from the attic. He goes to climb down from the attic, and he falls. Rabbi Yeshua took away the steps. Breaks his neck. Rabbi Yeshua comes in the morning, and he's lying there, flapping on the floor. Rabbi Yeshua, he looks to Rabbi Yeshua and says, Rabbi, I didn't know you took the ladder. Rabbi Yeshua says, what an empty person you are. You think just because I honored you, and I gave you with all the fine silver, because I had a guest, that means I trusted you? I honored you, but I didn't trust you. I honored you to serve you with the dishes. I didn't trust you. I took away the ladder. Of course, I knew you might be a thief. And that's the balance Chazal wanted us to have. On the one hand, we're supposed to honor people. We're supposed to be giving. Open your home. Be a giving person. But protect yourself. No one said you should trust them. If you have a break front with silverware there, put a lock on it. If you have kids at the table, stay and watch it. Nothing improper happens. And guys, I can tell you, improper things happen. I don't want to go into specifics, but they happen. You never know what's going to happen. And the same thing goes for your wife. Think about how you set up the seating at the table. A person has to, on the one hand, run an open home, and on the other hand, protect his own. It's an important balance. Don't take the Mishnah out of hand. I'm not telling you stories, even though unfortunately I have stories to tell, because I don't think I have to illustrate. You open the newspaper any week, you'll see there are improper things going on all over. My wife won't open the door for any of you guys when you come, if I'm not home. It's a deal we have. How do I know which guy is what? I don't. I respect everyone. I'm happy with everyone that comes, but there has to be some kind of limit. You know, I've been at the police precinct. I go a few times a year. A few times a year, not for myself. Okay. I can respect everyone, but there has to be some kind of limit. You know that most cases of rape happen with someone who's been at the house before, friend of the family? Most cases. So a person has to know what his limits are going to be. You have to be kind, you have to be giving, you have to put limits. The Mishnah continues and says, "Ve'yu'ani'im b'nei ve'techa." And the poor, they give them a parnasa in your home. So that's something we have to factor. People sometimes say, if I hire an Arab, I'll get a cheaper job. I take an Arab taxi, I'll get a cheaper rate. It's true. The Arabs will work for close to nothing. You're not supposed to indicate to an Arab, I'm not taking you because you're an Arab. So when I stop a taxi, I see who the driver is. And then if it's an Arab, so I'll give him a low rate. So I was coming from the Bris earlier tonight. So the first taxi that stopped was an Arab. So I said, how much do you want to Kiryat Moshe? He said, 35 shekel. So it was a high rate. He could have said 30. I said, for 20 I'll go. Now believe it or not, many times Arabs will take you for 20 on something that should have been a rate of 35. If he agrees, then I go. Because you're not supposed to give them a feeling that I'm not hiring you because you're an Arab. But the reason I do that is because then he thinks, forget you, I'm not going to go with you on such a low rate. He leaves, and then the next driver I stop, I see if it's a Jew, I get on, let him put on the meter, he gets his fair rate in Gemarnu. The Arab didn't feel slighted, and I gave the parnasa to a Jew. We have a mitzvah to try and support Jews. We're supposed to try and give parnasa to Jews. If you have to hire someone to work at your home, you should prefer hiring a Jew. Is it at all costs? If they tell you you can save 30% on building your home if you take an Arab or not, okay, it's not at all costs. Everyone has to know their financial situation. But in general, the yuanim b'nei v'techa, try to hire the poor. And that's the best type of tzedakah you could do, giving him a job. It's better than charity. Charity doesn't feel good. Charity is accepting a gift. But a job is better. Now, the flip side of this is that the pauper feels he has pride. He has a job. He's making a parnasa. I once heard from Rabbi Feinstein, Rabbi David Feinstein, that if a husband's been learning, and his wife says, I have a hard time respecting you, you got to have a job. He has to get a job. The Mishnah isn't only saying the poor man himself feels different. His wife also feels different about him when he has a job. And a person has to know that sometimes if he's doing something which his wife has a hard time looking up to, his wife says, I have a hard time valuing who you are if you don't have a job, that's reason enough to go and get a job. And even if it's at the expense of a person's continuing to learn more, he'll have to learn less. It's part of what's needed in a home. That the wife needs to feel like she values what her husband's doing, that she can look up to her husband. Yeah, David.
It's up to 1/6.
I don't remember the number. And now we're up to the biggie, the end of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Ve'al tarbe sicha im ha'isha." Don't have too much sicha. What is sicha? Sicha is a chatter. So let's notice that the Mishnah said, "Don't have too much." How much is too much? So this was something I was very curious about when I first got married. I went and asked many rabbis. I asked, how much is enough and how much is too much? What's too much with your wife? Yeah. So I got the same answer from many rabbis. It blew me away. They all said, as much as you and she need, that's what you need to do. More than that is too much. So I said, you mean as much as she needs? They said, no, as much as you and she needs, that's enough. I always thought it's like a favor you're doing to the wife. She wants to talk, you talk with her. No, the husbands also have a certain need to talk. And the wives also have a certain need to talk. So, especially in the beginning, later on, life takes on and then you don't have time to talk. I sometimes walk into the house at night joking and I say, hi, my name is Nathaniel Frankenthal, I live here.
It's how often does that get a laugh?
You should ask, how often does that get a cry? That's a, the Mishnah is telling us not too much. And very often when the Mishnah says not too much, the Mishnah is also indicating that there's a certain amount you have to do. Meaning the Mishnah is saying don't go overboard. But the Mishnah at the same time is indicate to us there's a certain minimum you do have to do. And this is one of the points that guys are weakest at. Guys read this Mishnah and they think like, what's the Mishnah telling me? I've yet to see the guy who spends enough time talking to his wife. Usually guys don't have patience. You know, she wants to tell me about the diaper the kid filled this morning. She wants to ask me about which diaper cream to use. She wants to ask me about which type of cottage cheese she should buy at the store. And she wants to tell me about her sister's new pet dog's new tooth, whatever, I don't know. But, you know, there are things she wants to share with the guys. And usually the husbands are like, yeah, and he's already looking somewhere else. Maybe the first few months he has patience. More often than not, what I'm encountering is that guys don't spend enough time talking. Usually, if a couple comes and says they don't have peace in the home, I'll challenge them to take a half hour where they disconnect all the phones every night, sit down over a cup of coffee or tea or whatever, not do anything but talk to one another and see where things go. And most couples don't do that. You know, they're talking as they're doing other things. They're never sitting down and actually having normal conversation. As they're talking, the cell phone rings, the phone rings, the emails come in, the chats, the instant messages, the Facebook. People never have time with one another. In our day and age, there's a lot of, by the way, but I can never understand how couples go to the movies together. So I don't know. I don't know what it means to go to the movies, but I don't understand what the joy is of sitting next to someone watching something else. You know, sit opposite one another at the table and talk, but I don't get it. You guys want to have time together, go to the park, talk to one another, go get a drink, go.
Have you never been to the movies?
Never been to the movies.
No.
What? I'm missing something.
No, okay. Not even in the States?
No.
Ballet, opera, anything like that?
No. 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 Wow. I shock you guys, huh? Why would I go to the movies? Anyways. Okay, back to our mission. I didn't say you shouldn't go to the movies. I said I never went to the movies. That's a different discussion why you shouldn't go to the movies.
Avatar on the big screen 3D.
Ah, that's right. I was at the planetarium, at the Hayden Planetarium. I was there. So that's where I learned about stars. My first class on stars was the Hayden Planetarium. Okay, so the Mishnah says not too much. And the Mishnah warns us about our own wife, certainly our friend's wife. This is another point. Why do guys have girlfriends on Facebook? And what happens when they get married and they still have girlfriends on Facebook? And why are they participating in chat rooms where there are guys and girls? At the end of the day, this Mishnah says that's wrong. And the Mishnah's formula is very simple. You spend too much time, you're harming yourself, you're wasting the time that you could otherwise be learning Torah, and ultimately you end up in perdition. No one's immune. And God created us that normal man wants to talk to someone of the opposite gender, as does a normal woman. And sometimes it'll be in the talkbacks. You could go to all these Torah columns online. You have all kinds of Torah sites, chinuch sites, and they're all kosher and beautiful. And then you go to the bottom and you see the talkbacks, and suddenly you see that Moshe knows Chani. And Moshe's married and Chani's married, but they've been having a lot of talkbacks back and forth, disagreeing on chinuch issues. Not exactly what you'd expect Moshe and Chani to be doing. Chazal warned us. The normal tendency of a man is to want to have a conversation with people of the opposite gender, but we all know that there's something inside of us that gets satiated when that happens, and that should be with one's own wife, not with someone else's wife, or not with another woman. If you're married, it's with your own wife. I have a standard reply. I have girls that request me being their friend on Facebook. So sometimes it's a girl that a guy from the Machon is dating, and sometimes it's the mother. A lot of your guys' mothers have asked me to friend them on Facebook, and sometimes it's my cousins. And I have a standard reply, which says, you know, I'm not saying it's improper to have a female friend on Facebook, but I don't think it's proper for me. I think that a person should have one female friend, and that's his wife. And other than that, women should have women friends. And I don't think, I'm not judging anyone who has female friends as wrong, but I definitely don't think it's right for me. And it's something to think about as you guys approach marriage. At the end of the day, if you have women in your life, just ask yourself how you'll feel when your wives have men in their lives. It's one of the issues I get on a weekly basis. Guys are either dating girls or engaged to girls or married to girls, and they're still in touch with boys from their past. So she says she did tshuva, that's beautiful, but right now she's still in touch with on Facebook and chat rooms, and it's a big problem in our day and age. I don't think a week goes by that I don't get this issue from guys. So before you think about the girls you're dating, think about yourselves. You know, where are you holding in this? And where will you be holding in this? And where do you want to be holding, and how are you going to get there? The Mishnah warns us what are the price of what is the price or prices that one pays for having idle chatter with women. And let's be honest, most of what's going online is idle chatter. There's nothing of real importance out there. I'm happy to hear you're in Israel. How's it going there? Great. How's the weather? Great. When are you going to be to... Come on. We all know it's all nonsense. You know, people are bored and people are seeking true companionship. And because people are so lonely in this vast world of information, so they feel the only way they could feel companionship is if other people are a part of their lives. So they post every... I woke up this morning. Whoop-de-doo. You know, look at what people post on their walls on Facebook. Good morning, everyone. Okay. You know, if someone looked out his window and yelled, good morning, everyone, what would you think? But on Facebook, somehow it's okay.
There's a hall at that for sure, at Sherry Sedek.
What?
A hall for people like that at Sherry Sedek.
I'm not mocking the people who do it. I feel bad for the people who are lonely who do it. But you have to ask yourself, I'm going back to the point at hand. The female friends you have on Facebook, is that really where you want to be in 10 years? And if it isn't, then ask yourself, how are you going to get there? I'm not saying a person should come back and write everyone a text message, go listen to the Frankenthal class at Machon Meir, now you'll know why I'm taking you off as my friend. Goodbye. I'm not saying that. You have to figure out how you can do it. But at the end of the day, you have to think about this Mishnah. The Mishnah is telling us a message. With your own wives, there's a certain amount of idle chatter that's necessary, that's proper, and then beyond that, you're wasting your time. Certainly with other people's wives and other women.
So if you're at the Shabbat table, dinner, lunch, and you know there are other couples there. So do you then not talk to the wives, the other wives?
That's an interesting question. The balance, how this works. So usually we try to focus the conversation. Men talk to men, women talk to women. The way we'd usually set up the table is that you have husband, wife, husband, wife, two women next to another, two men next to another, two women.
Are you going to do the men on one side and the women on the other side?
Usually not. I mean, it depends on how it works, but usually not. It's couples like to be together usually, and if there are kids, then they also usually they want to be together. Usually not. Also, I guess not. But also, it's a little bit cumbersome if you're all men, all women. I don't know. It's like I don't know. I think it works better the other way, but I guess that would also be okay. But usually, there's like. The men talk to the men, the women talk to the women. Sometimes the conversations overlap. If it's a normal conversation, that's one thing. We're talking about idle chatter. Depends on what the conversation is about. You know, if a guy is like telling his friend's wife, "Well, it's a beautiful hairdo you got," I don't think that's proper. Nor is commenting on her clothing, nor on her jewelry, nor on anything else of that nature. And then nor is anything else that's so close. So what are you going to talk about? And usually, idle chatter is a way of starting up with a person. It's starting conversation. Why are you starting conversation with someone else's wife? Talk to the husband. You know, people sometimes have old relationships with women. The Gemara tells us. And that's more reason to be careful. Because a person has to be real with himself. Where there's more feeling, then there's more danger. I always tell people when they get engaged, the laws of yichud are the minimum. We have certain guidelines as to the modesty that should be between a man and a woman. Well, those are the minimum, because now there's more emotion between you, I hope. And if there's more emotion between you, then you have to take more care that nothing improper will happen. You'll be married, have a good time. That's why you're married. But right now you're not, so you have to be more careful. And the Talmud tells us in their time also, there was a story of a rabbi who had a guest over, and that guest grew up with the rabbi's wife. So even though technically we say that so long as the husband is in town and he could show up any minute, there's no problem of yichud, he wouldn't leave them alone for a minute. He said they're fond of one another. They had a relationship as kids. And as such, he wasn't about to leave them alone in the house. Even though technically, halachically, if it were anyone else, it would be okay, because he could walk in at any minute. That's called baila ba'ir. The husband is in town.
Right.
But not when there's a relationship there between the woman and the man. And that's quoted in halacha. And that's what I apply to the couple that's engaged. So, you know, here you see. If there's more affection, you have to be more careful. I think there's a certain minimum which is normal. You show up to a house, you say hello to the hostess, and you say thank you for having me. And when you leave, you tell her thank you for the food. And you do address her and say thank you very much and wish her a good Shabbos. But more conversation, I think, should be focused to the man. If it shows up sometimes in conversation, the woman sticks in what she has to say, and then the conversation develops that way. But usually that's we try to leave it the women with the women and the men with the women. Again, not as in a fanatical sort of way. Not like if she has something to say, shh, you're a woman. Right, not like that. But in general, that's the direction the conversation is supposed to go. Just 1 second, David's been waiting.
The man at one table, woman at the other table, is that preferable?
I don't think so. I don't think Chazal wanted us to have a Shabbos table where women are at the other table. I don't think so. That's the balance here. You know, Hasidim do that. Hasidim, if they have guests, they could have the women in the kitchen and the men in the dining room. If you have a simcha where you have many men and many women, so then it's already a different story. So then sometimes, for the sake of modesty, we'll put the men in one room, the women in another room.
Not in rooms.
Or at one table or another table, for the sake of modesty. But if it's a family simcha and it's all cousins and whatever, why shouldn't they? And even if it's not a family simcha, when they had the dinners going back 70 years ago, 80 years ago, many yeshivas had seating where they were described, husband, wife, wife, husband. Men sat next to men, women sat next to women, and the men spoke to the men, women spoke to the women. They didn't. This big separation that we have today is a pretty new thing. You want to do it, good for you. The Rabbanim hold that's the way it should be. You have halachic basis for doing it the way we describe. However you want to go has its basis in halacha. Rav Moshe Feinstein holds that it's okay the way we describe, and other people hold it's not okay. Whichever way you want to go is fine, but at your Shabbos table, I don't think that's right. I mean, unless it's what your wife wants, you know, if that's what she grew up with, and less than that, she'll think you're a guy. Okay, what can I say? But I wouldn't. If you could have the family together, you have to understand, I'm a Yeki. My tradition is that the women sing at the table. And yeah, I'm the only one who has that tradition. My tradition is that if everyone's singing Zmiris, the women join in. So my wife won't do it. But the tradition, as far as what my ancestors, the custom they had, was that women are singing together with everyone singing together. That's within the borders of modesty.
No, it's only Kohashah, just the women singing.
The Rav hasn't addressed how we're supposed to broach these issues and deal with them with family, with wife, with kids.
What do you mean?
Don't answer the door if it's one of the bochurim. These types of things. Have you laid down the law without scaring your family?
That's a good point. First of all, I never laid down the law. No, just for the record, I want to explain. In my house, I don't wear the pants in the house. I always say there's one person who decides halacha in this house and ain't me. No, I say it straight out. I am happy to discuss things with my wife, and I'm happy to with my kids. I have a job. I'm their father. With my wife, I discuss things with her and. We hear one another and we come to an understanding. And if we don't come to an understanding, 9 times out of 10, so I'm happy to do what she wants. I think that, you know, they have understanding that we don't. But with kids, we'll get to it in 1 second. So.
But with the wife, with you, this all has to be dealt with within the first 10 dates, essentially.
No, we didn't discuss this before we got married. I didn't know I'd be in Machon Meir before we got married. I didn't plan on being here. I'm lucky I ended up here. I'm thankful I ended up here, but it wasn't the plan. These are things which I don't think should be discussed on dates because who knows where you'll be.
And the Yehud issues and all those types of things, like your former boyfriend, never alone, all these types of things. These things you don't have to deal with before marriage?
Former boyfriend is different than guests or guys from here.
Some boy you went to the kindergarten with, or
look, former boyfriends, unfortunately, probably do have to come up simply because we're encountering many situations where girls feel like they can enter marriage and keep all their former boyfriends.
Or she dated.
The question is what relationships there are. But that deserves its own class. How you address your relationships with girls from the past and her relationship with guys from the past. But as far as the family, if that's what we'll focus on here... Sorry, guys.